recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome, Ad Free Shows family. I am beyond thrilled today to introduce to you the man with the number one podcast in all the land. That's right. It's Jeff Jarrett. Jeff, how you doing today, man?
My friend, I'm fired up. I'm ready to go. When you gave me the opportunity to talk about Tony Faulk, I jumped at the, I really am. I'm excited to do it. You know, the Ad Free family. We're rolling right along. I am continue to be overwhelmed with the feedback from my world and the downloads and all the subscribers. We're rocking and rolling. I could not be happier with where we're at right now. Just less than 10 episodes in. But Tony Faulk is where it all started. So without Tony Faulk, my world wouldn't be here today. I know that's a heavy statement, but come on now. Wouldn't it fair to say?
It had to start somewhere, right? So it might as well be with Tony Faulk. I mean, he's the man. And I think you and Conrad, you've been doing a great job with the podcast. Again, we said it's number one, and that's real. You guys are crushing it. But one of the things that was promised along the way was, hey, we're going to do a bonus episode of where it all started for you, right? And you were a referee, and Tony happened to be that guy where you did, you wrestled first. He ended up being your first televised match. So let's get it going. I have a few things that I want to cover off with you before we jump into the match itself. Before we get started, let's talk about your progression. So you started as a referee, you went to wrestler. When you started as a ref, you knew you were going to be a wrestler one day, right? That wasn't the end goal, to be the next Earl Hebner, right?
I don't think so. But, you know, I was pulling the ring, as we've talked offline, we have a common love of basketball, and your beautiful bride right. has a common love. She's the athlete of the family, but that's a whole other conversation.
Obviously, yeah.
No, but during the summers, I played ball, I played basketball, but also on the weekends between camps and stuff like that, I would pull the ring for wrestling shows. And so one night over in Arkansas, my dad said, "You're reffing tonight," and that just sort of came out of the blue. And I'm like, because I knew it was coming, I just didn't know it was coming that night. So I had refereed before my junior year and before my senior year. So I'd done the referee thing. And then as time sort of went along, it's pretty cool, Paul, how just things were navigated through because Tony Faulk had come into the territory. Obviously, Bill Dundee and Buddy Lell, they were the top heels. But Tony on this sidetrack over there was quasi, you know, their lackey or would be in six-man tags. He was loosely associated with Bill and Buddy. But he had this thing going, like a lot of people know Barry Horowitz had it going on, but different in the territory days, certain heels, especially on their way out, would start on a losing streak. And it's a simple way to keep heat on a heel that he's saying, tonight I am going to stop my losing streak. Because in sports, everybody can, you know, especially during the summertime when a baseball team will go on a 7-game or an 8-game or a 9-game losing streak or something along those lines. So Tony Faulk was the proverbial journeyman heel that was on this losing streak. And I was refereeing and got beat up. But what better way for him to notch his first victory than to take out the promoter's kid? And that's sort of the foundation of the storyline as it relates, people who do know or don't know, whatever. Bill Dundee, the top heel, beat me up. And that was really the catalyst to bring Jerry Lawler back into the fold from a loser leave town match. But it's sounds like a complicated storyline, but it wasn't. But I know we're here to talk about Tony. So that's, I'm probably giving you a little bit more, but I'm trying to set the stage.
Sure. No, absolutely. So let's talk about you and wrestling again. Was your dad hesitant at all to let you train to wrestle? Was that an issue in your family, you and your dad?
No, you know, he had started so many different talent and a lot of guys come in and matter of fact, he always, you know, this long-term training plan, he was never a fan of that. It's like learn the basics and get in there and figure it out. And I sort of that was the scenario. I went from refereeing to, hey man, you're going to have your first match. But also I didn't really drill down on it mentally then. But me just being around it and seeing so many matches and so many, I mean, whether it's the first match or the last match in the territory days, I had watched, even at this point, a lot of live wrestling because I'd been to so many shows. I've said this often through the years. I believe I've watched more wrestling live. I'd love to see somebody who's watched as much live wrestling. I've been blessed. So, no, it was he was always for get in there, kid, and let's give it a shot.
Now, Tojo Yamamoto, who we did a watch-along before, and he was involved outside of the ring on the X-ray we did with Tom Pritchard, he was one of the ones who actually trained you. What was he like as a trainer? And your dad helped out a little bit too, right?
So, Tojo, you know, the legend continued to grow. Tojo didn't get in the ring and teach me headlocks and takeovers and none of that. Tojo was a guy that always talked psychology. And to put it in full context, Tojo was a legendary, not only heel, but babyface. And he was my dad's tag team partner. And he had taught my dad a lot about selling, about that's how you draw money. And candidly, that was the line that you can do all the moves. And he was never like, I can't do an impersonation. I'm still not good on impersonations. And it's tough to, you know, when you hang around the Bruce podcast, it's tough when you don't do impersonations. But Tojo in his broken English would talk, basically what he would say was, Jeff, it doesn't matter what kind of moves you do in the ring. That I don't care. You know, he would say, I don't care if you can throw a great punch, a great drop kick, great hip toss. It doesn't matter. You have to know how to sell. But what is so true about that is even all the way up to Vince McMahon, the money is in the emotion, the emotional connection. And that's what Tojo trained me on. The emotional connection with the fans that let the people see you hurting, whether it's your arm or your knee or whatever it is, show emotion, sell. That was what Tojo helped train me on. There were a couple of other guys, but my dad showed me some basic headlock takeover, that kind of stuff. And actually Tony Falk, as we're about to see, Tony was a guy that sort of took me somewhat under his wing, whether he wanted to or not, and had to teach me some of the basics.
Well, listen, you're going to have to brush up on your impressions if you're ever going to make a cartoon with Swoggle, okay? So just start working on them. We had a little bit of fun catching up on those a little while ago. Hey, listen, so you're a referee. You're close to the action. You're watching these guys grapple in the ring. Was there something you were told to focus on specifically, whether it be timing, transitions, footwork, etc., as you're, you know, performing your function as a referee in the ring?
You will relate to this. I didn't know what footwork meant in a professional wrestling context, but I damn sure knew what it was in basketball. Don't cross your feet up, slide.
Yes.
You have to, you know, as a defense playing defense against offense, turn your opponent. So it's a dance without knowing it. Well, that was a huge blessing. And I've often said that over the years that amateur wrestlers and football players, when they make the transition, the footwork's just not the same. Me and Abyss used to joke about it, but basketball, there is that slide step. So I was never coached up on footwork. The thing that I was coached up most on was they really wanted me two things: to don't throw a punch unless you can throw a punch. Just don't do it. Do a forearm, do something else. That don't do anything quote unquote phony, but also sell. When in doubt, sell, because you can gather your thoughts. You can gather your mentality. I was a young guy, small guy, wiry, you know, wasn't very big. Go to selling. And that is something that you can learn your ropes, learn the ropes of the basics of a match.
It's interesting that you said that. As I watched this match preparing, I didn't realize how small you were at this point. When you say thin and wiry, you're not kidding, pal.
Yeah, straight off a basketball court. I played in college basketball, the tournaments, you know, the season. I literally, obviously, running up and down the basketball court at 19 years of age. It's hard to put on weight when you don't lift weights and you're running all the time. So, yeah.
Well, you figured out how to put weight on. You bulked up. I've seen you do it at G's too, the old fried chicken place. So you definitely figured out how to do that. Let's talk about Dutch and Dundee at the time. They were originally booking for your dad, as we continue to set the stage here. What were they like, in your opinion?
You know, Bill, I've had unique relationships with all of them. You know, Dutch was a huge part of the early days of TNA. You know, we worked together as, you know, at WWF. He was Uncle Zeb. But in the territory days, Dutch was a booker for my father off and on for years and had worked for him, you know, quite a bit. And there's a series of matches between Jerry Lawler and Dutch Mantel that I'll put up against literally any real personal feud. It was such a phenomenal series of matches. But so Dutch was a babyface at the time, and Bill was the heel, and had come back from Watts' territory and Kansas City and WCW and that whole run and everything. But him and Lawler had the legendary feud over and over and over. And when Dundee took out the promoter's kid, me, Jeff Leonard at the time, not Jeff Jarrett. That was another thing. I went by Jeff Leonard.
That's a nugget.
They didn't want to draw attention to that. So when Dundee, when Dundee, that's my middle name. When Dundee took me out, it was a natural setup to bring the King, Jerry Lawler, back.
Okay, so we've talked about it. We understand who trained you. You were doing refereeing. You were known as Jeff Leonard. You were thin and wiry. You start working out. You're getting trained. Now we understand who the bookers are. Let's talk about your opponent here, this first match. It's Tony Falk. We've talked about it a little bit. He lives in Memphis, and he's got many different characters and gimmicks, all right? At the time, he was in the middle of a losing streak, as you mentioned at the top of the show, and he figured that an easy win would be against the much smaller, scrawny referee known as Jeff Leonard at the time, who just happened to be the promoter's son. Now, Jeff, in my research, Tony's storyline wasn't always intended to end up with you being introduced against him, but it just happened to work out that way, didn't it?
It did. And our paths have crossed. I mean, Tony is in one of the vignettes that we're going to cover on My World at the end of July, but he's in one of those original Double J vignettes. He's driving the blue Cadillac in front of the Ryman Auditorium. That's Tony. Tony's also Tony back when Boy George was hot. But this was Loser Tony. And he was a guy that just, thank God he was there because we walked me right through it. But as I went from Jeff Leonard on a Saturday morning and got beat up and ended up having my first match a week later or wherever it was and became, went by the name of Jeff Jarrett, me and Tony's first match at the Mid-South Coliseum, April or early April of 86, to this day, I thought it's really good. It's a simple booking, but he didn't win, but I didn't win. We went to a 10-minute draw and it was such a fun match to work when I look back on it now, because at about the 5 or 6 minute mark of the match, when the Lance Russell, who also called the time, he would say 5 minutes gone, 5 minutes left to wrestle, 6 minutes gone, 4 minutes left to wrestle. 7 minutes gone, 3 minutes. And Tony started responding to that. So the people weren't really cheering for me to win. They were literally cheering and standing on their feet for me not to lose. And that is simple psychology that works so well. And Tony was getting more and more frustrated, more and more frustrated. So the pops of the matches were me just kicking out. And Tony knew how to tell that story beautifully.
So listen, you mentioned there, first of all, we have some questions at the end of this. And one of the guys at the end mentions Tony Falk being your limo driver in the WWE vignette. So there you go. We've already mentioned that. Secondly, I don't want to brush over this. You were Jeff Leonard as a ref. You became Jeff Jarrett as a wrestler. Was there a lot of dialogue between you and your dad? Or are you just like, hey, do I really want to assume the Jarrett last name as a pro wrestler with everyone kind of knowing you're pulling the strings? Was that a long conversation or just, no, I'm just going to be Jeff Jarrett?
Authenticity of the storyline. When I got beat up, I was Jeff Leonard on TV and at the spot shows and, around the horn. It was never mentioned. But when Dundee and Landell beat me up, beating up Jeff Leonard is, okay, for those who don't know, okay, a referee got beat up. Big deal.
Right. Okay.
Oh, wow. That's the promoter's kid. He didn't have to do that. Why? He's only 19 years old. He's in college. He's not even a part of he's not even a full-time wrestler. Matter of fact, he's just a referee. He's not even had his first.
Yeah. Right? Doesn't carry as much weight to it. Yeah, absolutely. All right. Good stuff. So the story is that that Tony was told we can't have another situation like Nick and George Gulas. What's the story behind Nick and George? Is that a mentality of having the promoter's son in the ring again, right?
And I have heard this story over and over through the years. And my father was just so adamant, the first word comes to my mind, is that he had an experience that and it wasn't a good experience. Nick was the promoter. George, what was the promoter's kid, and rightly or wrongly so, George had the reputation of having a silver spoon, that he didn't pay his dues and everything that went with that. Well, my dad went a 180 different direction. He made sure that he wasn't going to have that. And look, there, you know, I had to hear different stories, and there's that time, you know, Greg Gagne was the son of a promoter. Dustin hadn't quite had his first match this time. That happened a couple of years later, but there were, you know, Mike Graham was a promoter's kid. You know, the Crockett's kids were announcers. Then you go into the Von Erich kids, promoter's kids. So you can just sort of see that, you know, there were some bad experiences for multiple of reasons, but my dad had a personal relationship because Nick Gulas is who my father had worked for at one time. And then he broke off and started his own promotion. And there was a lot of bad feelings, mixed feelings with George, you know, and other wrestlers about quote unquote being the promoter's kid.
Well, there was something to it too, about keeping the belt kind of in the family. So you're not going to run off and leave, you know, at that time they would hope you wouldn't leave your dad or someone stranded with the promotion, right?
That came later. Yeah.
Well, there you go. We'll save that for another watch along. How was Tony to call the match with, Jeff? Did you guys rehearse it a lot ahead of time? I know you said, we said at the top, this was the first televised. Did you rehearse a lot, or did you have everything figured out? Did he call it in the ring? What was that like?
Because you keep everything basic, no rehearsing, but talking through the basically the beats of it. But again, it's a different generation. Late 80s, there were, you know, just not like it is today. It was talk it through, and this is what we're going to do. There wasn't rehearsals, and you know, I was in the business years before I quote unquote had anything that resembled a true walkthrough rehearsal. Lots of talk through, but not walkthrough rehearsal.
All right, Jeff. Well, let's do this. Let's jump into it. We're going to start the match. You and I both have a link, and we're going to provide, we're going to try to see if we can add this to our video feed when this is post-produced so that you can all watch it along with us. But Jeff and I are going to watch it here. Jeff, let me know when you're ready.
I'm ready.
And we're going to click play in 3, 2. You find it? You good?
Ready.
All right. 3, 2, 1, play. And there it is on the screen, Championship Wrestling, Tony Falk versus Jeff Jarrett. And you're in your little, you have your blue ring jacket on. Here comes Tony in the robe, and he's red, headed.
But as you can see, I wore short tights. Look,
yes, you did.
I'm so new. I didn't even have knee pads on there, Paul.
You didn't. It's like the old Cody Rhodes look.
Nothing, and that came. So this is like 3 weeks into my career, 2 or 3 weeks.
You're still trying to purchase your gear.
For real.
That's yeah.
Those boots are not, those boots are my dad's boots.
And he's out here complaining because I guess you guys had a match. And in the contract, it said that it was one fall, 20-minute match. And somehow the bell rang at 10. You had gone 10 minutes with him.
And
the bell rang.
But because he wanted that first victory. Simple storyline.
Yep.
People reacted to it. The studio audience, maybe 150 people in the audience, they hate Cody, but it was... It was good interplay, and there's Tony laying it out, and I love Tony.
He was given, and let's just say this, Jeff, we really wanted Tony to be a part of this, but I know he's got some health issues in his family, right?
Family health issues, not Tony, but his mother is
very, yeah. So unfortunately, Tony, he couldn't be here.
Told me that when he's able and in the right mind space. He cannot wait to come join the ad-free team. I can't wait to do an Ask Tony Anything because he's got stories about Shawn Michaels, James Storm. I mean, we could go on and on and on. And here's Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell as they come out. And
Landell's making sure he gets his flex in here. So we're at, by the way, for those watching with us, this is late April, early May 86, right, Jeff, at the Mid-South Coliseum.
Yeah, early April is when I had my very first match at Mid-South Coliseum. I want to say this is like 2, maybe 3 Saturdays after the original angle. But, Buddy Landell, a heat magnet, Dundee, heat, just a different era. Look at Dave Brown back there. You know, as the years would roll along, Dave would take the lead. But at this point, he was Lance's sidekick. And, you know, to put it in further context, Dave did the weather every
he looks like a weather guy.
He is. He's a weather guy. Monday, yeah. Friday, 5 and 10 p.m. newscast. But wow, 86. There's Dundee giving.
Who's this? Help me with the guy with the sport coat and the glasses.
Marlon and Billy Travis, and who else do we have out there? Oh, that's Dutch.
Okay. Yep, Dutch. And is that Dr. the blonde with the, is that Dr. D. David Schultz? It looks like him in the face. Maybe not.
Wake up. That is Billy Travis.
That's Bill. Okay, Billy Travis.
Cameraman, just not getting out of the way. doing what he's doing. Referee Jerry Calhoun, longtime Memphis referee.
You got to remember, I wasn't getting Memphis wrestling as a kid. That wasn't coming up to the Northeast at all.
Obviously. Billy's no longer with us. Buddy's passed away.
Oh man. How many cameras? We have two total here.
So you, so you have, three actually.
That, okay.
But you know, we're in a new studio. I mean, you know, there's the WMC 1960 Union Avenue. It's basically a building with two news studios, you know, and they do cooking shows and the news.
Okay.
And look at the over there when you see people all dressed in same t-shirts, there would be different clubs, boys and girls clubs,
yes,
or whatever it is, ball teams. You know, it was like a Saturday outing. And here we go. We're off and running.
You're wearing your little the baby blue tights there. And you said those boots are your dad's.
Yes. What are we? 165?
Oh, maybe. My goodness. How long has it been since you've watched this match, Jeff?
I mean, I don't know that I've ever watched this back. What sort of shocked me? Did you just say this thing goes 8 minutes?
This total clip here, yeah. This goes. We're already at 4 minutes, so okay. This is really quick.
I was gonna say is yeah. And look, me early in my selling days, not very good, but you know, here so, I go, and Tony walking me through the whole thing.
But it's got to be easy working with Tony Falk here to play babyface, obviously. He's a red hot heel on the mic there. The fans are going, the fans are popping for you big time.
Yeah, look, and he took the backdrop without me even tossing him over. But look at the people. They're into it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kids crew over there. Hell, half of them are waving just to get on TV.
Was he stiff or was he protecting you constantly the entire time?
Tony would always lay it in. He wasn't considered stiff, but, and do you see how the different camera?
Oh yeah.
It's the white balance, and I know I'm getting in my production eye, but you know, that's a different look than the hard camera look. And it goes with everything good and bad about studio wrestling. Look, no knee pads. I can't imagine getting drunk for an hour with no knee pads.
I mean, there's not even a pad on the floor.
No.
That was just part of the deal. Here you go. Sunset flip.
Yeah, but we had to go outside for us to do this finish.
There it is. And that's the match. You win.
Very simple. He beat me up. Paulie, as you saw, he beat me up the entire match.
So you're getting the shit beat out of you here at this point, and you're on rubber band legs. What's going through your head, though, when this is over? Are you relieved, exhausted, excited? What's happening?
Hey, look, so they lock the door, and there's Pat Rose, Tony Falk, and Gaddafi. And Bill and Buddy had no problem laying in on me. They actually...
Oh, you can tell. You can tell they're loving it.
They loved it, but all good. All good. But no, it was, you know, my old man would go tell him, if I see one phony punch on him, I'm going to be pissed off. So they didn't mind, you know, laying it in.
And he's laying it in already, cinched in the Boston Crab.
And Bill's going to come off the top of my head. And look, at this point, I'm in the dead cell. This is terrible. Look, I'm asleep. What am I? There?
Oh, man. You're a dead fish in the middle of the ring.
Yeah, not a fish out of water, just the old bass. There's Joe LeDuc coming through.
Joe LeDuc hits the ring, and he's clearing house. Nobody's coming in to face him. He's a big bad man.
Oh yeah, Joe had some great feuds. French Canadian drew a lot of money in the Memphis territory over the years. Lots of money.
And they have the ring surrounded, but nobody wants to come in and take on old Joe here. And you're dead. You are literally dead. Here comes some more help. Dutch, and the guy I didn't know. And yeah.
And there was a storyline going on between LeDuc and Lawler.
Yeah.
And Dutch. And, you know, coming out of this, Billy became my tag team partner. This was the early relationship between me and Billy's career.
Oh, okay.
And then there, yeah. And then there's my grandfather, but also Eddie Marlin, promoter. Oh, nice. Eddie Marlin.
Yes.
Look at Joe, just pulled me out like a rag and he's going to lift me up.
Yeah.
55, 60 pounds of me. And we're carrying the dead fish out.
Yeah, you're just like a used washcloth, and there's the end of the match there. All right, well, listen, we have some fan questions. We'll run through those, and then we'll wrap this up if that's okay.
Sure.
First one comes to us from our good buddy, Coach Rosie. We all know him from Twitter. And he says, what was your day like leading up to your first match, and what was your anxiety level?
Zero anxiety. I still can't spell that word, but no, no anxiety. I had watched this basically my whole life and going into, did I have nerves? Yes. But I to this day, if I've got to go out and perform, I get nerves. I think that's real healthy, but I had a comfort level. I've always had sort of a inner confidence that when you step on something that has to do with athleticism, that I could hold my own. Now, in my early days, if I had to go cut a promo, I would say anxiety, but that I would get nervous in an uncomfortable way. But as far as before the first match, I was ready to go. I was so excited.
I'm sure once you get hands on somebody, you're like, okay, now I'm comfortable. All the noise stops. The conversations in your head are over, and it's time to go. Good stuff. All right, Aaron Mathis is up next. He said, do you remember how stiff Landell and Dundee were when you went from ref to wrestler? It looked like the last punch Dundee gave you was brutal. You just talked about it, but your comeback had the crowd going nuts until Bill landed that right. By the way, my dad said your dropkick was the best.
How about that? I like that guy's dad. But no, I tell you what, I just alluded to it. Bill and Buddy, and they were – basically, I hate to use the word instructed, but they knew they got, let me just say this. They knew they had the complete green light from my father to lay it in and then some. And I knew that as well. It's not like my father went behind my back and said, hey, these guys, no, it was very transparent. Guys, my kid is not skilled. This is brand new to it. So if you got to lay it in, more than usual, do it. And I was cool with that. I understood it.
There you go. Hey, listen, like you said earlier on, he was dead set in his mind. It wasn't going to be easy street for his kid, because obviously people had seen that before in the business, and he was made up in his mind. He wasn't going to let that happen with you. So good for him. All right. John Lindsay, he's the one who mentioned about Tony Falk showing up in your vignette as the limo driver. So that's pretty cool. That was kind of the statement that he had. He said, it seems like old Frank Morrell had a part in them as well. Is that true? Did he?
Long time wrestler in the territory and also referee. So, yep. And also Hall of Famer Jacqueline was in the vignettes, and Ronnie Gossett, RP Lee. So those vignettes, as we're going to get into at the end of July on My World. So, yep, it's the old territory days. Lots of characters.
All right. Up next, Jason Bayless. He said, was his dad, talking about you, retiring on national television in the same promo as announcing his debut, always the plan?
Who retired?
He just asked, was his dad retiring on national television in the same promo as announcing his debut, always the plan? Was there a promo that I'm assuming it would be you? It says, ask Jeff.
So to set up the original angle, I was the referee, for all that, but nothing to do with any of that. Jerry Lawler had lost a loser leave town, and that they did these kind of storylines back in the day to give Lawler a rest, to basically put a reset to, you can't get heat on heels unless the top babyface is either hurt by them or away or whatever it may be. So Lawler was away at the time, and they used this as a, as a way to bring Lawler back. But my dad had been retired for quite some time, an eye injury and all that. So the question's a little bit inaccurate.
Okay. All right. Last question, final one. And this is kind of something we talked about a little bit earlier, but Matt Guerra wants to know, being the son of Jerry Jarrett, were any other ring names discussed other than using Jeff's real name? And I'll say at any time in your career, Jeff, you kept Jeff Jarrett your entire career.
Yep. And that was, I say by design, but you know, I worked for my father and I worked in Japan and Texas and Puerto Rico, and I'd always gone by that name. So, going to the WWF in 93, it was something that I was already, quote unquote, a character using my real name. And then, you know, when Vince saw the name, thought about it, spelled it, read it off, him and Bruce and myself and the vignettes and, you know, the spelling, J-E-F-F, J-A-R-R-E-T-T, that was off and running. So never any consideration of going, diverting from that.
Well, Jeff, there you go. You survived this bonus episode. This was a lot of fun going back in time to where it all started for you. And we were able to track down your very first televised match. See you take some bumps, end up as a dead fish. Lots of fun storylines, though. And I had a good time. I hope you did, too.
I had a blast. Year one of 35. So
there you go.
All those years ago, Tony Falk trying to break his losing streak, and it never happened at the hands of Jeff Jarrett.
That's right. Well, good stuff. Listen, ad-free shows, fans and members, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it. We look forward to more bonus content with Jeff coming down the road. But for today, that's going to wrap us up. Thank you all so much. And on behalf of Jeff Jarrett, this is Paul Bromwell thanking you for being a part of ad-free shows.
Peace.